We are recording. And so I'm gonna like read the script. So my name is Rahil and I'm here with Devin Wen. The date is May 4th, 2021. The time is 8:08 p.m. We are meeting remotely. I am in Tijuana, Mexico. Devin is in Ladera Ranch, California. So Devin, I want to briefly review the informed consent and deed of gift document that you signed. So this interview is for the COVID-19 Oral History Project, which is associated with the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive. The COVID-19 Oral History Project is a rapid response oral history focused on archiving the lived experience of the COVID-19 epidemic. We have designed this project so that professional researchers and the broader public can create and upload their oral histories to our open access and open source database. The study will help us collect narratives and understandings about COVID-19, as well as help us better understand the impacts of the pandemic over time. The recordings, demographic information, and the verbatim transcripts will be deposited in the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive in the Indiana University Library System for the use of researchers and the general public. So, do you have any questions about the project that I can answer?
No, not at this moment.
Taking part in the study is voluntary. You may choose not to take part, or you may leave the study at any time. Leaving the study will not result in any penalty or loss of benefits to which you are entitled. Your decision whether or not to participate in the study will not affect your current or future relations with Indiana University, IUPUI, or the IUPUI Arts and Humanities Institute. Participating in this project means that your interview will be recorded in digital video and or audio format and may be transcribed. The recordings and possible transcriptions of my interview, copies of any supplementary documents and or additional photo that you wish to share, and the informed consent and deed of gift may be deposited in the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive, and the Indiana University Library System, and will be available to both researchers and the general public. Your name and other means of identification will not be confidential. Do you have any questions?
No.
Okay. I'm also asking that you verbally confirm that you have agreed that your interview will be made available under the following license, that is Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International CC BY NC SA 4.0. And finally, I want to ask for a verbal confirmation that you have agreed that your interview will be made available to the public immediately.
Yes, I confirm.
All right. So I guess jumping right into it, that's my first question is, so I want you to picture that it's January 1st, 2020. What was your year supposed to be like?
I guess I was envisioning myself picking up more hours at my job at a boba place and working to get an internship so then I could finish out my last couple semesters in our undergraduate career. I was supposed to graduate at the end of 2020, so I was imagining getting like my first bigger corporate job or internship that semester. That's what was my goal, so that would be like spring semester was about to begin and I was going to focus on getting a job downtown.
All right, so I guess with that in mind, what has your year been, since then, I guess, since you learned about the pandemic? I guess, what kinds of things do you do now on your day-to-day, and like, where do you see, how do you feel about like, how this past year has gone?
It was a little different. I was a little discouraged with like not going to school anymore in person, and I still hadn't had a job at the time, I was kind of afraid of the lack of real world experience I'd get with my major in business by the time I'd graduated. And as the year went on, at the beginning of the pandemic, I thought I would still graduate in person. And as the year went on, I realized that the chances were becoming slimmer and slimmer, and we did a virtual graduation, but I had gotten lucky and my opportunities had still expanded, and I ended up getting a remote job for the first time. I've never worked for a person or a business remotely. So that was a new experience for me, graduating online and working. So I moved back down to Southern California with my family, and my dad is one of the partners of a small business. And so I was kind of experiencing that firsthand, where small businesses were readjusting to the pandemic and trying to figure out how to survive. Especially, it was a gym, so gyms were especially struggling. So I got to see how a small business was able to adapt and move outdoors, whereas many other small businesses that were much like my family's were not able to stay open. So it was a complete redirection and new type of business model. And a lot of people have seen that with a bunch of other industries, not just like fitness moving outdoors, but like restaurants and stuff. So I kind of observed other businesses stay open and kind of compared that to like my own experiences. And since then, things have been opening up more and more, but that had been like a big thing, is like how businesses were staying open in this country, and like specifically in California and Orange County, which was a really different experience than living in San Francisco. And the people down here are much different than in the city. You know, Orange County had been on the news quite a few times for the anti-COVID protesters, anti-mask protesters. And it was a very tense time to be living down here, and especially feeling unsafe sometimes. But, you know, I was able to stay safe for the most part. And last summer, you know, I had seen a lot of like different groups, you know, people I went to high school with were still going to bars and like, you know, putting themselves and others at risk. Whereas like, you know, myself, because I had somebody in my household is high risk. So we were trying to be, you know, pretty COVID conscious, mm-hmm. and just for others' sake as well.
Okay. So I guess like thinking about, you know, business and the economy and all that, like considering at the point that we're in right now in the pandemic, what do you think about like what concerns do you have about the effects of COVID on like, you know, future employment and I guess, you know, the U.S. economy more broadly?
I think that it's kind of bringing to light how much like how different businesses value their employees and just, you know, essential workers, because a lot of businesses, unfortunately, a lot of small businesses were not able to like stay operating because, you know, they couldn't get help from the government. And then the larger businesses and few small businesses that could stay operating, it really brought to light how much they value their workers, you know? So if they're not prioritizing their workers' safeties, a lot of people don't want to come to work, and they'll be, you know, experiencing more benefits by going on unemployment. And then you see a lot of things about people complaining about how workers don't want to go back into the workforce. And I don't know, it just brought to light how much or how little many businesses and companies don't value their employees' well-being. So I think that's something that people are noticing, and they're not willing to sacrifice their health and safety for companies that don't really value them as individuals, more just like, you know, because a lot of people still don't want to pay their workers above minimum wage, which is minimum wage is most of the time, if not every time, not livable wages for people who are not like, especially not like teenagers, people who have families to take care of. Yeah. So I think that, that's coming to light, and people are like, you know, realizing their worth as human beings, and people are protesting, which they should. And yeah, I think I think the big part of it is, like, you know, the workers' well-being and stuff.
Yeah. So I guess, like you mentioned that right now you're working remotely. I'm sorry, my cat.
No, you can.
Yeah. So right now you mentioned that you're working remotely. I mean, how do you, like, envision, I guess, transitioning back into, like, in person, working in person, or, like, if that transition is even going to happen? I mean, where do you see your own future, like, with your current employment?
With my current employment, I was actually hoping to move back in person, because I've never experienced a real adult job like that before. And I wanted to progress and grow with the company. But I've actually seen a lot of other people's transition. We're in that phase right now where a lot of people, you know, their offices are opening back up and they're requiring people to come, like, 1 to 2 days into the office. Mm-hmm. And people being remote have realized that that's not always necessary. So, but a lot of HR departments I've seen are struggling because half of their workers want to stay remote. And then if they stay remote, then half of them want the option to come back into the office. And I think it's finding that balance between how companies can, like, organize a system where they figure out if people want to work remotely or work in the office. Because I think a lot of people are unhappy with whatever they're told to do, and people want the freedom to choose. And then, you know, for a lot of jobs that do require traveling, like, they don't necessarily, people are realizing they don't necessarily need to travel, or, like, the expenses. So for my future, I would hope to work back in person, or at least have a hybrid modality. Like, you know, a lot of schools are developing, and I think that is also gonna, you know, stay in, you know, the future. A lot of schools are gonna maintain that, and jobs, hopefully, because I think that having a good balance is
key. Yeah, I like that. So you mentioned that you had to, I guess, move back home, right? I guess, how has, like, COVID, like, affected how you associate and, I guess, communicate with your friends and family now that you are back home?
I mean, at the beginning of quarantine, it was much different, where everybody was, like, very strictly, like, locked inside their houses with very minimal activity going outside. And I think that geographic location has a lot to do with how people are living their lives in COVID. So being in Orange County, it was very normalized to go out and about. But at that time, like, and even now, I'm pretty picky on who I spend my time with, because, you know, I usually spend time with people who are pretty COVID conscious. And even now, but at the very beginning, everything was completely, like, you know, online communication. Mm-hmm. And it kind of made learning how to, you know, like, interacting with people again, like, since then, it's like a big readjustment, because people are so desensitized to being on their screens all the time. And then, I think I had a very unique experience this pandemic, because my job had opened up back in the summer, and we were outdoors, and we were pretty COVID conscious, so I have been able to stay and work in more of, like, a positive environment, not like a work environment that, like, you know, a lot of essential workers were pretty miserable. So I was pretty lucky to have a healthy work dynamic and work environment. Mm-hmm. So I've actually been able to stay, like, pretty socially active compared to many other people. And so I know that a lot of people are still readjusting to social interaction, especially now that we're, like, kind of phasing into, like, a transition period back in person. But I don't know, I think I've never communicated with my own family this much, even before I moved to college. And I think, luckily, it's been pretty beneficial to my family relationship. With my friends, I did lose touch with some friends that, you know, I was pretty close with back when I was in school. But, yeah, I don't know. It's been pretty different. I mean, pros and cons, and I think I have a very unique experience where I was able to maintain like social relationships in a safe manner.
Interesting. So I guess like, yeah, you said that, you know, this is definitely the most you've talked and like interacted with your family. What kinds of things do you guys do, like, you know, in the day-to-day?
Well, pretty uniquely enough, I go with my parents every day to work. So, because they are part owners of a gym, and my dad, like, kind of works, like, in the administrative part of, like, three different companies, but the gym is the only place where we are on, like, he is on site, and then, you know, funnily enough, my mom is the manager. So, I mean, I've never had that work relationship with my family, and it's been really interesting and, you know, helpful for me because that's my, that was my field. I was in business, so I've kind of been able to observe firsthand how businesses operate, and I learned a lot more than I did in most of my schooling. So that's like one thing. And another thing is we've kind of created this system where we try to cook dinner every day and we take turns, so we, you know, eat dinner as a family, which is very different because in San Francisco we'd eat dinner alone with our cats. Yeah, and so I guess like because, you know, even working remotely at home and then, you know, which, you know, you do class, work, school in your room, and then all those lines have been blurred, so it's like, you know, we've all been struggling to find that balance to kind of like, you know, compartmentalize all the aspects of our life into like the respective places so we can have a healthy like work-life balance. That's also kind of happened with my work with my family because, you know, we're always working together. And then so also organizing my life with my family work balance because everything gets all blurred together, just like remote work at home. So that's been a new challenge I've never had to face in my life. But it's interesting.
I guess can you like explain that a little bit more?
So yeah.
What does like organizing like all that mean, and like mm-hmm. where does that fit in with like mm-hmm. family dynamics and things like that?
Yeah, so I mean, especially like it's kind of evolved throughout the pandemic. So in the beginning of the pandemic, like we are all locked inside. So a little fun fact, during the beginning of the pandemic, we had 8 people living in my house. So my parents, me, my girlfriend, my brother, his girlfriend, and my sister. So that was also another reason we had a lot of social interaction because we had so many people living in one house. And so, yeah, from that point, we've like, you know, we all, it's a lot of people and you kind of have to like figure out how to, you know, I don't know where I was going. Can we start over? Ask your question again.
Okay, I can ask my question again. Yeah. I was just like wanting to know more about how
the work part.
Yeah, like this work-life balance and like how it factors into like your family dynamics because you work with your family. And I guess how much like living at home and interacting with them so much, like how much that has changed or maybe hasn't changed so much, like, you know, like how you interact with family and all that. Yeah,
well, my parents are my bosses, so they're my superiors, and basically I just work as a receptionist at the gym, and they treat me like all the other employees, but obviously according to the other employees, I have to be on like, you know, my best behavior and have my peak performance. So nobody thinks I'm like, you know, getting special treatment. Nepotism baby. And so what?
It's a nepotism baby.
Yeah, literally. Well, I mean, it's like a pretty basic job. It's not like I'm climbing a corporate ladder. So, I mean, I'm just working at the front of the gym. But, you know, like still, I mean, in any workplace, you gotta be like respectful and, you know, keep family life and work life separate, but a lot of times those lines overlap because, you know, our family goes to the gym, or a lot of my coworkers have been like you know, adopted into my family. So, like, you know, we've become found family with everyone. And so they'll be coming, we've had some issues with that. So we've had, like, some employees get too close, and then, like, they end up creating tense work relations and end up not working with the company anymore. So, I mean, it hasn't just been for me, but, like, been for other people who get involved with, like, you know, small businesses, because, like, as owners, they get really, they become really invested in their employees and, you know, care for them, you know, holistically as a person, as an individual, not just as an employee. And sometimes, you know, family and work doesn't always mix very well. So we've had some, you know, bad experiences and some mostly really good experiences. So, you know, even when we come home, it's, we have to figure out how, you know, not to talk too much about our work life at home, because we need to keep it separate, because then it becomes too overwhelming and you don't want to, like, have these weird tensions with your own family members. And then especially, like, because, you know, some of my best friends and, like, people who feel like family are also employees. So kind of navigating that in this pandemic, especially with all these different issues that are arising with, like, you know, people want to, like, we want to make sure everybody is taken care of, but there's only so much a small business can do for their employees. And, you know, you become invested, like, oh, we want them to pay rent, but, like, you know, it also depends on, like, employee performance. So, like, we're trying to figure out that balance together. And, like, you know, me too, I'm just an employee, so, like, there's things, like, I have to stay out of, you know, like, things that are administrative issues, and, like, I'm pretty emotionally invested, but, you know, I'm trying to figure out that place at home.
Yeah. I guess, so, moving on a little bit, and taking all, like, that into mind about, like, I guess how much the, you know, your work life is so important, and, like, how much, you know, the people you surround yourself with, that's, like, you know, your community, right? I guess, how would you say that, like, the COVID-19 outbreak has, like, affected your community? And, you know, that can be, like, yeah, taking it back, maybe school or work or, you know, the larger community you, like, live in. And, you know, you can speak on any of that or some of that.
So for, I think for, like, my family community, like, my immediate family, I think it's really developed a lot of our relationships, because, you know, we're all in different parts of our lives. Like, my younger brother, who's just starting college, who started during the pandemic and didn't get to move away like I did when he was supposed to, it really took a toll on him, like, individually. But as for, like, the family dynamic, like, it's the most I've ever interacted with him, as well as for my sister, who's 7 years older than me. So we're all in completely different parts of our lives, and I think it brought us together. It might have held them back individually, but I think, like, you know, in, like, family-wise, we've been pretty developed. I think for my friendships, I've rekindled a lot of friends, like, you know, my close friendships, and we've got to experience many different things, like, different societal movements and stuff, and it brought us closer, because we realized, you know, we have similar values, and we are kind of learning that together, especially living in Orange County, where things can be very polarized, and still, like, you know, sticking strong to our own beliefs and values and trying to navigate those conversations with people who are not always like-minded around us. For my school community, it was kind of a weird period trying to graduate in the pandemic and, like, still try to maintain, like, different friendships and, like, relationships with professors. I feel like I wasn't able to, you know, develop some of the relationships with professors that are necessary for your adult life, because everything's through a screen, and it's really hard to connect with, you know, some, like, if you want to create relationships with, like, your superiors, and, like, you kind of need that face-to-face, especially if you're shy like me. Because in the beginning of my school years, at in our undergraduate years, I was fairly shy, so I wasn't able to, you know, create those friendships with professors. So but by the time I felt like I would have been ready and, like, you know, mature enough, I didn't really get that opportunity to. So I'm hoping as I continue to go to school post-grad, I will get another chance to do that. But, yeah, I kind of was held back because of the pandemic. And hopefully after that, I get more opportunities. Yeah, I mean, the work community is pretty strong because we were able to adapt and stay open by being outdoors and being COVID safe. So I think my work life and working remotely, that was something new. So those parts are growing.
Interesting. Yes, you mentioned like COVID safe. I think with that, like thinking of that, how would you say that the people like around you are responding to the pandemic or have responded to the pandemic so far?
Well, I think because we are naturally drawn to like-minded people, my immediate circle has like maintained similar practices and behaviors and values. So we'd all been pretty safe since the start, like my friends. There had been some people I noticed on social media from that live around me and that I'm not really friends with. They were completely not practicing COVID you know, procedures. And other places, like my cousin had a similar job as me at a gym in LA, and she would tell me every day about how they weren't safe. She eventually quit. So they didn't wear masks. They didn't, you know, protect their employees' safety because, you know, against the customers, they would prioritize customers, which is very different because at my work, we prioritize employees over clients. And, you know, if you practice like COVID-safe procedures, chances are more people are going to feel comfortable and more inclined to support your business. Mm-hmm. And if there's people who are rude, it's not like they would want their business anyways. So yeah, I mean, we've stayed pretty strong with that, and the other employees and business owners also feel safer practicing those procedures, especially during the beginning. But as more people are becoming more vaccinated, we're definitely like experiencing that transition, and you know, things are becoming a little different. Some people are going out more and stuff, but usually the people that I know that are doing that are vaccinated. So that's what I've seen.
So earlier you mentioned the like issues surrounding like social movements. I was wondering if you could, I guess, elaborate more on that. Like, what kinds of things have you seen like arise out of the pandemic? Through the pandemic, I suppose.
Yeah. Like, you know, the revival of like the popularity of the Black Lives Matter movement, that's not really a product of the pandemic, but it's something that we had all experienced, all, you know, because it's a social media movement, and obviously like the issues are not on social, like it's not like a social media that, you know, okay. So it's not something that is restricted to social media. It's something that's very much happening in real life, but it's something that the whole world observed on social media because we weren't really outdoors and we're all observing the news through the elections and stuff. So I guess huge thing was Black Lives Matter, and like in the beginning of the pandemic and still now, which it's important to, you know, stay focused on and notice how a lot of people's efforts were very performative. That's something we were all noticing since all our eyes were on each other and seeing how everybody responded to these issues and like the backlash people would receive if they didn't respond. So that's why a lot of people's efforts were very performative, just because of the social pressure, not because of genuine, authentic reasons. And I think that's something we're all noticing within each other. And then from that, a lot of like the Stop Asian Hate, and noticing how that the Stop Asian Hate kind of elicited a legislative response, whereas like the Black Lives Matter is still, we're still working to, you know, witness like that appropriate like political response and like with laws and stuff, and how it took what, like almost a year to convict that cop who murdered George Floyd, sadly. But so I think that's been a big part of it. And luckily I have like a close circle of friends who are, you know, who share the same values and same beliefs. And like, we've made a lot of efforts while in Orange County to support people, like, you know, those who are affected by the movements. But it's very different living in Orange County than living, you know, where we previously lived in San Francisco, because, you know, a lot of people are actually don't share those values. And there was more support for, like, down here more people felt strongly about masks than they did about like actual murders. So that was very interesting experience.
So you kind of went in a little bit into what my next question was going to be, but like, I guess I'll ask it anyways in case you want to like add on some more. But I guess, what do you think are important issues right now that like the media may or may not be covering?
I definitely feel like the media makes the Black Lives Matter movement seem like a trend, and it only pops up when, you know, certain events become publicized, when it's actually been something that's been happening for hundreds of years. Like, historically, it's not something that's new, and it's not something that happens, like, you know, at certain times. It happens every day, and it's something that needs to be, you know, a priority, and people need to be consciously thinking about, because even if they can't make a difference, like, within our own government, there's things that and work that people need to do every day to kind of like people need to consciously focus on these issues, since like these issues are ingrained in our system. So it takes like the conscious work of individuals and how they live their everyday lives to work against that. And I definitely feel like the media only responds when it's too late. So I think it's until more people start, you know, unfortunately start getting killed, that people respond to it, instead of like focusing on the preventative actions that a lot of us are trying to make. So yeah, I think a lot of these issues and a lot of these like violent occurrences continue to happen, but the media kind of has like more of a responsive approach. It's always like too late.
So I guess clarify, what have been your own primary sources of like news and like information gathering during this pandemic?
So especially during last summer, and my house, the news was always on the TV, and of course things always circulate on social media. And then, you know, firsthand experiences of like people that they share, like either they spread through like word of mouth from both sides. So because I live in an area where there's a lot of different opinions floating around, so word of mouth, and then also like people's own experiences shared on social media. So not exclusively news sources on social media, but also people's own experiences and like shared videos and stuff.
Like for sound accounts and stuff, yeah. Okay. Kind of in the same line of thought, but moving more towards like the actual COVID pandemic, have you like, what are your thoughts on how, like maybe local, state, or I guess federal leaders have responded to the pandemic differently? Like, do you have any thoughts towards that?
Yes. I'm pretty disappointed with a lot of government leaders' response to social pressure as opposed to like scientific resources. Because a lot of people claim different things scientifically, and they'll claim, oh, like different doctors and different scientists say all these complete opposite opinions. But I think that, for example, in California, our governor has responded to a lot of social pressure because a lot of people were angry and upset, and a lot of protesters when, you know, the CDC would say otherwise. And especially in Texas, that was when they were the first to lift the mask ban. I had seen a lot of people in agreement in California. And I just was pretty disappointed because the pandemic is clearly not over. And I mean, when people look at the news and they see people, others like being allowed to behave a certain way, they think it's fair for them to also behave that way. When obviously the leaders of the leaders of each state are so different. So they're going to make different decisions based on their own like opinions and, you know, subjective studies. Mm-hmm. When I think other countries have had much more united, you know, policies.
Mm-hmm. Are there, I guess, mentioning like other countries, do you think that there's any, like, how should I phrase this? Like, is there like a specific country that you've seen that has been handling like the pandemic and its effects like efficiently, and maybe we should model after?
I think a lot of Asian countries and have handled it pretty well. A lot of decreased numbers of COVID cases and COVID deaths, and especially countries who are like islands, like for example New Zealand, who had been doing pretty well, in Australia, which is, you know, they've had pretty successful accounts of recovering from COVID. Mm-hmm. And there had been several outbreaks coming back because, you know, people were traveling internationally. But when they were completely locked down from the rest of the world, they pretty much returned to normal. And but their laws, I believe, were much more restrictive than the United States. So I think that's why they're able to recover pretty quickly.
Okay, yeah. And I want to like backtrack a little bit and take it a little bit more small scale. But for my next question, I just want to like send a reminder that you don't actually have to answer this question if you don't, you know, feel so inclined, and you don't. Not share any like personal health information that you want to remain private, or also the health information of someone you know who can identify, like giving any identifiable information for someone you may know. But with that in mind, I guess, have you or anyone you know gotten sick during the COVID-19 outbreak?
Yes. I was sick. Most of us were affected by it. There are pretty there's like a handful of people who we were in contact with or had been in contact with COVID and didn't get sick, but they still continue to be, you know, COVID safe and like are getting vaccinated. So it was kind of just unpredictable who it would affect. Mm-hmm. But we got pretty sick.
So excuse me. I guess, what was your experience in responding to that, sickness?
Obviously, they shut down the gym so everybody could be safe, and especially during the holidays. Because, there was a little outbreak. In Orange County, it's kind of, inevitable to come into contact with that, because there's people who do not, who are not responsible go out even like with symptoms. But then at the same time, it's kind of hard to recognize the symptoms, because in general, I have a sensitive stomach. So I wouldn't think anything of those symptoms, because at first they were pretty mild. It just seemed like, you know, everyday life issues. But so to kind of slow the spread, we shut down and make sure everybody who was at our workplace stayed home and like quarantined and got tested before anybody came back to the workplace. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's kind of hard to avoid in Orange County, because there's so many people you can't control what they do. You know, you go to the grocery store and, you know, somehow you might come into contact with it.
That's like the next question I have is, that's in what ways do you think that the that COVID-19 is affecting people's mental and or physical health?
Mental health, I know. I know. I mean, it's, first of all, being quarantined can really take a toll, lack of social interaction. And then while that's happening, just like the impending fear that you might contract this, like a sickness that you don't know the how it will affect your body, and it could be pretty deadly, that is a big, you know, factor that's like inducing like anxiety and paranoia in a lot of people. So it's kind of just like the fear of the outside world, which is fair, but then you have these people who are pretty reckless, and that makes, you know, everybody's lives unfair, because, you know, people are doing their social responsibility while others are not. And I have some family members in San Francisco who really like don't go outside at all, don't go to the store, don't go to anything because of that fear. And you can kind of see how it's affected their mental health over time. And I'm sure it's like that for a lot of people, because everybody's opinions and beliefs and ways of living life, like whether you're in the same family or your friends, things, people become very split. And this is like really, I don't know, I would say like big time to see people being split over political beliefs, societal beliefs, and then also COVID on top of that. So I think that COVID has been really harmful to a lot of people's mental health, and I don't know, there's so many things you can attribute it to, but I think that a lot of people who are at fault are living their lives recklessly. But I mean, it's like a pandemic, so I mean, the definition is like, you know, an uncontrollable spread of an infection. So it's hard to really understand.
Just going forward, how would you say that the pandemic, I guess, compares to other big events that have happened in your lifetime?
I don't think... what do you mean compares? Like what events?
Compared to other things that have happened, like, you know, in our lives, like other, I guess, you know, that's a hard question. I actually, now that I'm here, question.
I mean, it's hard to compare because, you know, events in my lifetime usually affect me or my family in particular.
Yeah.
And then this one affects everyone. So it's hard to kind of compare. So what do you mean?
Well, actually, now that you say that, it's kind of like, yeah, it affects everyone. I feel like the one thing that I'm like that's sticking out to me right now, that it's like, okay, maybe we were too young, but it's like our families and stuff.
Like, what do you mean? I mean, like, it's kind of like another recession, right? So
yeah,
in like 2006 2008, that time, mm-hmm. the way there's a recession, I'm sure it was pretty similar. I mean, a lot of people lost their jobs, lost their homes. Yeah. But I was, like, in elementary school, so I couldn't really understand, like, you know, I only understand the firsthand experience. Mm-hmm. But I think COVID hit my family harder, because at the time, we were still recovering from different, like, medical experiences within my family and expenses. Mm-hmm. So it was just, like, pretty off timing. To take a financial hit on top of everything. Yeah. But I mean, it's, I can't remember that perception. I definitely think COVID had hit us harder than the recession, but I don't know because I was a kid. So maybe there's things that I didn't quite understand.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Because, you know, when you're younger and you're a child, you experience issues very differently, right? Like, your family tries to protect you from understanding yeah. all of, like, the hardships when you're younger, because you can't really understand things at the time. So when you're older, you kind of experience it by your family's side. And, like, you know, you can see the truth behind everything. And mm-hmm. you can... you know, kind of grasp the concepts more.
That's interesting. Like this, I guess, reflection on the future. I feel like at least now that, you know, we're older and we're, you know, adults, you kind of can reflect on things like that. Because even though it didn't make sense at the time and, you know, all that, like now that we're older, we, you know, taking that, like, let's say, like, the recession in mind, like, we know that that happened, and that affected us in some kind of way, mm-hmm. and so I guess, like, leading into my next question, I guess, knowing what you know now, what do you think that, like, individuals, communities, or, I guess, governments need to keep in mind for the future? Take it on. I know I hit you with a hard one, huh?
So, wait, are you still comparing to the recession?
No, it doesn't have to be a comparison to the recession.
Okay, you can compare to
the recession if you'd like.
Segued into that from the
segued into that from the
recession. So, keep in mind now that we've experienced, because you kind of said that now we're adults. Right, so
yeah,
what do I think the governments should do?
Yeah, I mean,
our communities should do.
Government, communities, individual.
What communities?
Your communities.
Like,
yeah, I mean, maybe you can, like, take that question in parts, I guess. Mm-hmm. Just the whole recession thing, and like that, just kind of made me think of this next question. Mm-hmm. Because it's like that whole, you know, reflecting on the past and how that's, you know, leads into the future. So it's like what we're doing right now, what's going on right now, our responses as individuals, mm-hmm. as whole communities, as, you know, government body. What are things that we should keep in mind for the future? Like with all that's happened during this pandemic.
I think that the pandemic showed a lot of weaknesses within the government and its ability to support a lot of families and businesses. And a lot of, you know, they say this country is built upon small businesses, and it failed small businesses. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, it showed a lot of holes within, like, the economic structure. Mm-hmm. 'Cause a lot of companies had to shut down, large corporations and small businesses. And it was, like, we were pretty unprepared for that. So I think we need resources to sustain families and their businesses. I think most of it is a government issue, because there's no way individuals and families can really prepare for that, because we've experienced epidemics and stuff before, but never to this extent. So there's no way to anticipate something. Also, like when we would go to the store right when the pandemic started and everything was out of stock, there's nothing we as people could have done to prepare for that, because how would we know? And like, how would we have the financial means to stock up on all these household products? Like, not everybody has the means to do that. And I mean, like now, like school wise, we can adapt to like hybrid modality, which is also still an issue and a struggle for like, especially younger students who are like, you know, kids whose brains are still developing, and how they're gonna like kind of develop with this really like technology based world. Whereas like, you know, when we were kids, we learned in school and we learned with other kids. So I think that's something we need to focus on, is like how to adapt education for everyone, and then also for everyone in different socioeconomic backgrounds, because there's some kids who have a parent who's a stay-at-home parent, and you know, they can kind of supervise them, but then there's some kids whose parents are working, where, you know, not everybody has two parents. So I think like we need to really adapt, like, you know, education, and I don't know how we could do that necessarily. That's not my expertise, but I mean, it's definitely a problem we all noticed, and there's a lot of weaknesses in that. Yeah, I think that's the main things: school, family, work.
Okay, next I'm going to ask you two questions, but I want you to keep in mind that they're two separate questions.
Okay.
And so I'll ask the first question first. but what can you imagine your life being like in a year? And so this is the more realistic question. This is like, you know, everything that's going on and everything that you anticipate. What do you think your life is going to be like in a year, realistically?
So I'm pretty set back, like, financially than I had anticipated. You know, I thought I'd still be living in San Francisco. I thought I'd have a job up there. But, you know, so now in a year, I'm hoping to continue my academic path. So probably be living somewhere down here, which is more affordable than in San Francisco, to be able to like sustain my own independent life. I can't really afford what I had once wanted, but it's okay. I don't really want to live there anymore, because I mean, COVID took a toll on many major cities where, you know, there's a lot of issues within those cities and like safety issues. So it's kind of shifted my perspective on, you know, the place I once lived. Mm-hmm. So probably gonna stay somewhere in Southern California and continue going to school. Yeah, that's where I'm probably gonna be in a year.
Okay, so now that you said that, now I'm not so sure about this next question, but I'll ask it. No, because the next question was, okay, what do you hope your life is like in a year? So it's like, I don't know, maybe that realistic tone a little bit much.
But yeah, well, I mean, hopefully like I'd be going to school and having like a stable job and like,
yeah,
living somewhere, because that's like where I want to be in a year. Like, hopefully I am like have a secure place to live and a secure job. Mm-hmm. But you know, realistically, like, that might not be possible. I might be living with my family, so you know, because I had, you know, intended to move out, what, like months ago. That was my goal. I was like, okay, at this point I'd be moved out by now. So like today, like thinking back, you know, maybe a year ago, I would have thought I was gone. But you know, realistically, the date's getting pushed back and like financial circumstances keep changing, so who knows. Hopefully I'm able to like live independently on my own, and I've really readjusted my goals. Mm-hmm. So hopefully I don't have to readjust them anymore.
I don't know, does that, I mean, how does that make you feel, I guess, with like, yeah, readjusting goals and expectations and just where you think your life would, will be heading? It's like, I mean, so much has changed and so much is going to continue changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it sucks, but I think it's also like, I matured my decisions, because either way, my original goals were a little financially ambitious. But I mean, along with the rest of the world, I've had to, like, you know, keep like readjusting, adapting, you know, my future goals. I think it definitely could be worse. I mean, at least I already finished school. A lot of people still have to continue to do that. So yeah. I feel like I don't feel too bad individually. I'm pretty optimistic, and I am focusing on, you know, supporting others, because I at least I have, like, you know, a safe home right now, and I have a family that takes care of me, and we take care of each other. So I mean, I'm pretty grateful for that, and, you know, having a stable job. Or yeah, because I have two jobs, so, you know, I think it sucks, but I think I have a lot more to be grateful for.
That's so sweet. You're going to make me cry. So I guess before we leave off, do you have any last thoughts, anything you want to add on? Or any questions for me about the project itself, or, you know, any loose ends you want to tie up?
No, I really think we talked about everything. You know, I think we took a lot. A lot. We talked a lot.
Okay, well,
anything else?
The recording here.